heavy, as were all the weapons of the fair folk, but carefully and sturdily crafted. Without another word, Dolly beckoned them to follow him across the meadow. Grumbling and muttering to himself, the dwarf led them to what seemed to be the sheer face of a cliff. Only after he had reached it did Taran see long flights of steps carved into the living rock. Dolly jerked his head toward the stairway, and they began to climb. This passageway of the fair folk was steeper than any of the mountains they had crossed. Melingar strained forward. Wheezing and gasping, Henwen pulled herself up each step. The stairway turned and twisted. At one point, the darkness was such that the companions lost sight of each other. After a time, the steps broke off, and the group trod a narrow pathway of hard-packed stones. Sheets of white light rippled ahead, and the travelers found themselves behind a high waterfall. One after another, they leapt the glistening rocks, splashed through a foaming stream, and at last emerged into the cool air of the hills. Dolly squinted up at the sun.
"Not much daylight left," he muttered,
more gruffly than King Idyllic himself.
"Don't think I'm going to walk my legs off all night, either. Didn't ask for this work, you know. Got picked for it. Guiding a crew of what? An assistant pig-keeper? A yellow-headed idiot with a harp? A girl with a sword? A shaggy, what is it? Not to mention the livestock. All you can hope for is you don't run into a real warband. They'd do for you, they would. There's not one of you who looks as if he could handle a blade."
This was the most Dolly had spoken since they had left Idyllic's realm, and, despite the dwarf's uncomplimentary opinions, Taran hoped he would finally come around to being civil. Dolly, however, had said all he intended to say for a while. Later, when Taran ventured to speak to him, the dwarf turned angrily away and started holding his breath again.
"For goodness sake," Ailanwy cried, "I wish you'd stop that. It makes me feel as if I'd drunk too much water, just watching you."
"It still doesn't work," Dolly growled.
"Whatever are you trying to do?" Taran asked.
Even Henwen stared curiously at the dwarf.
"What does it look like?"
Dolly answered.
"I'm trying to make myself invisible."
"That's an odd thing to attempt," remarked Fluda.
"I'm supposed to be invisible," snapped Dolly. "My whole family can do it, just like that. Like blowing out a candle. But not me. No wonder they all laugh at me. No wonder Idyllic sends me out with a pack of fools. If there's anything nasty or disagreeable to be done, it's always fine good old Dolly. If there's gems to be cut, or blades to be decorated, or arrows to be footed, that's the job for good old Dolly."
The dwarf held his breath again, this time so long that his face turned blue and his ears trembled.
"I think you're getting it now," said the bard with an encouraging smile. "I can't see you at all."
No sooner had this remark passed his lips than a harp string snapped in two. Fluda looked sorrowfully at the instrument.
"Blast the thing," he muttered.
"I knew I was exaggerating somewhat. I only did it to make him feel better. He actually did seem to be fading a bit around the edges."
"If I could carve gems and do all those other things," Taran remarked sympathetically to Dolly, "I wouldn't mind not being invisible. All I know is vegetables and horseshoes, and not too much about either."
"It's silly," Ailanwy added, "to worry because you can't do something you simply can't do. That's worse than trying to make yourself taller by standing on your head."
None of these well-intentioned remarks cheered the dwarf, who strode angrily ahead, swinging his axe from side to side. Despite his bad temper, Dolly was an excellent guide, Taran realized. Most of the time, the dwarf said little beyond his usual grunts and snorts, making no attempt to explain the path he followed, or to suggest how long it would take the companions to reach Caer Dathil. Taran, nevertheless, had learned a great deal of woodcraft and tracking during his journey, and he was aware the companions had begun turning westward to descend the hills. They had, during the afternoon, covered more ground than Taran thought possible, and he knew it was thanks to Dolly's expert guidance. When he congratulated the dwarf, Dolly answered only, "Umph," and held his breath. They camped that night on the sheltered slope of the last barrier of mountains. Gergi, whom Taran had taught to build a fire, was delighted to be useful. He cheerfully gathered twigs, dug a cooking pit, and to the surprise of all, distributed the provisions equally, without saving out a private share for his own crunchings and munchings later on. Dolly refused to do anything whatsoever. He took his own food from a large leather wallet hanging at his side and sat on a rock, chewing glumly. He snorted with annoyance between every mouthful and occasionally held his breath.
"Keep at it, old boy," called Fluda.
"Another try might do it.
Your outline looks definitely blurred."
"Oh, hush," Ailanwy told the bard. "Don't encourage him, or he'll decide to hold his breath forever."
"Just lending support," explained the crestfallen bard. "A flam never gives up, and I don't see why a dwarf should." Henwen had not left Taran's side all day. Now, as he spread his cloak on the ground, the white pig grunted with pleasure, waddled over, and hunkered down beside him. Her crinkled ears relaxed. She thrust her snout comfortably against Taran's shoulder and chuckled contentedly, a blissful smile on her face. Soon the whole weight of her head pressed on him, making it impossible for Taran to roll onto his side. Henwen snored luxuriously, and Taran resigned himself to sleeping, despite the assortment of whistles and groans directly below his ear. "I'm glad to see you, Hen," he said, "and I'm glad you're glad to see me, but I wish you wouldn't be so loud about it." Next morning, they turned their backs on the Eagle Mountains and began heading for what Taran hoped would be Caer Dathil. As the trees rose more densely around them, Taran turned for a last glimpse of the eagle itself, tall and serene in the distance. He was grateful their path had not led them over it, but in his heart he hoped one day to return and climb its towers of sun-flecked ice and black stone. Until this journey, he had never seen mountains, but now he understood why Gwydion had spoken longingly of Caer Dathil. His thought led Taran to wonder again what else Gwydion had expected to learn from Henwen. When they halted, he spoke to Fluda about it. "There may be someone in Caer Dathil who can understand her," Taran said, "but if we could only get her to prophesy now, she might tell us something important." The bard agreed. However, as Taran had pointed out, they had no letter sticks.
"I could try a new spell," offered Ailanwy. "Akron taught me some others, but I don't know if they'd be any use. They haven't anything to do with oracular pigs. I do know a wonderful one for summoning toads. Akron was about to teach me the spell for opening locks, but I don't suppose I'll ever learn it now. Even so, locks haven't much to do with pigs, either."
Ailanwy knelt beside Henwen and whispered rapidly. Henwen seemed to listen politely for a while, grinning broadly, wheezing and snuffling. She gave no sign of understanding a word of what the girl was saying, and at last, with a joyful,
"Wait!"
she broke away and ran to Taran, wriggling gleefully. "It's no use," Taran said, "and there's no sense in losing time. I hope they have letter sticks in Caer Dathil, though I doubt it. Whatever Dalban has, it seems to be the only one of its kind in all Prydaine." They resumed their march. Gurgi, now official cook and firemaker, strode boldly behind the dwarf. Dolly led the companions through a clearing and past a line of alders. A few moments later, the dwarf halted and cocked his head. Taran heard the sound, too. A faint, high-pitched screaming. It seemed to come from a twisted thorn bush. Drawing his sword, Taran hurried past the dwarf. At first he could see nothing in the dark tangle. He drew closer, then stopped abruptly. It was a Gwythaint. Chapter 17. The Fledgling. The Gwythaint hung like a crumpled black rag, one wing upraised, the other folded awkwardly on its breast. No larger than a raven, it was young and barely out of its first molt. The head seemed a little too big for its body, the feathers thin and quilly. As Taran cautiously approached, the Gwythaint fluttered vainly, unable to free itself. The bird opened its curved beak and hissed warningly, but its eyes were dull and half-closed. The companions had followed Taran. As soon as Gurgi saw what it was, he hunched up his shoulders, and with many fearful glances behind him, turned and crept off to a safe distance. Melengar whinnied nervously. The white pig, undisturbed, sat on her haunches and looked cheerful. Fluda, on seeing the bird, gave a low whistle.
"It's a stroke of luck the parents aren't about," he said. "Those creatures will tear a man to shreds if their young are in danger."
"It reminds me of Akron," Ailanwy said, "especially around the eyes, on days when she was in a bad temper."
Dolly pulled his axe from his belt. "What are you going to do?" Taran asked. The dwarf looked at him with surprise.
"Going to do? Do you have any other stupid questions?
You can't imagine I'd let it sit there, can you? I'm going to chop off its head to begin with."
"No," cried Taran, seizing the dwarf's arm. "It's badly hurt."
"Be glad of that," snapped Dolly. "If it weren't, neither you, nor I, nor any of us would be standing here."
"I will not have it killed," Taran declared. "It's in pain, and it needs help."
"That's true," Ailanwy said. "It doesn't look comfortable at all. For the matter of that, it looks even worse than Akron."
The dwarf threw his axe to the ground and put his hands on his hips.
"I can't make myself invisible," he snorted. "But at least I'm no fool. Go ahead. Pick up the vicious little thing. Give it a drink. Pat its head. Then you'll see what happens. As soon as it's got strength enough, the first thing it'll do is slice you to bits. And the next thing, fly straight to her own. Then we'll be in a fine stew."
"What Dolly says is true," Fluda added. "I myself don't enjoy chopping things up. The bird is interesting in a disagreeable sort of way. But we've been lucky so far, with no trouble from Gwythaints, at least. I don't see the use of bringing one of Aroan's spies right into our bosom, as you might say. A flam is always kind-hearted, but it seems to me this is overdoing it."
"Medwin would not say so," Taran answered. "In the hills, he spoke of kindness for all creatures, and he told me much about the Gwythaints. I think it's important to bring this one to Caer Dathil. No one has ever captured a live Gwythaint, as far as I know. Who can tell what value it may have?"
The bard scratched his head.
"Well, yes, I suppose if it had any use at all, it would be better alive than dead. But the proposition is risky, no matter what."
Taran gestured for the others to stand away from the bush. He saw the Gwythaint was wounded by more than thorns. Perhaps an eagle had challenged it, for blood flecked its back, and a number of feathers had been torn out. He reached in carefully. The Gwythaint hissed again, and a long, rasping rattle sounded in its throat. Taran feared the bird might be dying even then. He put a hand under its feverish body. The Gwythaint struck with beak and talons, but its strength had gone. Taran lifted it free of the thorn bush.
"If I can find the right herbs, I'll make a poultice," Taran told Ailanwy. "But I'll need hot water to steep them."
While the girl prepared a nest of grass and leaves, Taran asked Gergi to build a fire and heat some stones, which could be dropped into a cup of water. Then, with Henwen at his heels, he quickly set out to search for the plants.
"How long are we going to stay here?"
Dolly shouted after him.
"Not that I care. You're the ones in a hurry, not I."
He thrust his axe into his belt, jammed his cap tight on his head, and furiously held his breath. Taran was again grateful for what Karl had taught him of herbs. He found most of what he needed growing nearby. Henwen joined the hunt with enthusiasm, grunting happily, rooting under leaves and stones. Indeed, the white pig was the first to discover an important variety Taran had overlooked. The Gwythaint did not struggle when Taran applied the poultice. Soaking a piece of cloth torn from his jacket in another healing brew, he squeezed the liquid drop by drop into the bird's beak.
"That's all very well,"
said Dolly, whose curiosity had got the better of him, and who had come to observe the operation.
"How do you imagine you'll carry the nasty thing? Perched on your shoulder?"
"I don't know," Taran said. "I thought I could wrap it in my cloak."
Dolly snorted.
"That's the trouble with you great clodhoppers. You don't see beyond your noses. But if you expect me to build a cage for you, you're mistaken."
"A cage would be just the thing," Taran agreed.
"No, I wouldn't want to bother you with that. I'll try to make one myself." The dwarf watched contemptuously, while Taran gathered saplings and attempted to weave them together.
"Oh, stop it,"
Dolly finally burst out.
"I can't stand looking at botched work. Here, get out of the way!"
He shouldered Taran aside, squatted on the ground, and picked up the saplings. He trimmed them expertly with his knife, lashed them with braided vines, and in no time at all, the dwarf held up a serviceable cage.
"That's certainly more practical than making yourself invisible," Alanwi said.
The dwarf made no answer, and only looked at her angrily. Taran lined the bottom of the cage with leaves, gently put the Gwythaint inside, and they resumed their march. Dolly now led them at a faster pace to make up for the time they had lost. He tramped steadily down the hill slopes without even turning to see whether Taran and the others were able to keep up with him. The speed of their pace, Taran realized, served little purpose, since they were obliged to halt more frequently. But he did not deem it wise to mention this to the dwarf. Throughout the day the Gwythaint steadily improved. At each halt, Taran fed the bird and applied the medicines. Gurgi was still too terrified to come near. Taran alone dared handle the creature. When Fluda, endeavouring to make friends, put his finger into the cage, the Gwythaint roused and slashed at him with its beak.
"I warn you," snapped Dolly. "No good will come of this. But don't pay any attention to what I say. Go right ahead. Cut your own throats. Then come running and complaining afterward. I'm just a guide. I do what I'm ordered to, and that's all."
At nightfall, they made camp and discussed plans for the morrow. The Gwythaint had entirely recovered, and had also developed an enormous appetite. It squawked furiously when Taran did not bring its food quickly enough, and rattled its beak against the cage. It gobbled up the morsels Taran gave it, then looked around for more. After eating, the Gwythaint crouched at the bottom of the cage, its head cocked and listening, its eyes following every movement. Taran finally ventured to put a finger past the bars and scratch the Gwythaint's head. The creature no longer hissed, and it made no attempt to bite him. The Gwythaint even allowed Alanwi to feed it, but the bard's attempts to make friends failed.
"It knows perfectly well you'd have agreed to chop off its head," Alanwi told Fluda, "so you can't blame the poor thing for being annoyed at you. If somebody wanted to chop off my head, then came around afterward and wanted to be sociable, I'd peck at him too."
"Gwydion told me the birds are trained when young," Taran said.
"I wish he were here. He would know best how to handle the creature.
Perhaps it could be taught differently.
But there's bound to be a good falconer at Caer Dathil, and we'll see what he can do." But next morning, the cage was empty. Dolly, who had risen long before the others, was the first to discover it. The furious dwarf thrust the cage under Taran's nose. The sapling bars had been slashed to pieces by the Gwythaint's beak.
"And there you have it," cried Dolly. "I told you so. Don't say I didn't warn you. The treacherous creature's halfway to Anuvin by now. After listening to every word we said, if Aron didn't know where we are, he'll know soon enough. You've done well. Oh, very well," Dolly snorted. "Spare me from fools and assistant pig-keepers."
Taran could not hide his disappointment or fear. Fluda said nothing, but the bard's face was grim.
"I've done the wrong thing again, as usual," Taran said angrily. "Dolly is right. There's no difference between a fool and an assistant pig-keeper."
"That's probably true,"
agreed Alanwi, whose remark did nothing to cheer Taran. "But," she went on, "I can't stand people who say I told you so. That's worse than somebody coming up and eating your dinner before you have a chance to sit down."
"Even so," she added, "Dolly means well. He's not half as disagreeable as he pretends to be, and I'm sure he's worried about us. He's like a porcupine, all prickly on the outside, but very ticklish once you turn him over. If he'd only stop trying to make himself invisible, I think it should do a lot to improve his disposition."
There was no time for further regrets. Dolly set them in even swifter pace. They still followed the hills along the Estrad Valley, but at midday the dwarf turned west and once more began to descend toward the plains. The sky had grown as thick and grey as lead. Violent gusts of wind whipped at their faces. The pale sun gave no warmth. Melengar neighed uneasily. Henwen, placid and agreeable until now, began to roll her eyes and mutter to herself. While the companions rested briefly, Dolly went ahead to scout the land. In a short time he was back again. He led them to the crest of a hill, motioned them to stay close to the ground, and pointed toward the estrade below. The plain was covered with warriors, on foot and on horseback. Black banners snapped in the wind. Even at this distance, Taran could hear the clank of weapons, the steady, heavy drumming of marching feet. At the head of the winding columns rode the horned king. The giant figure towered above the men-at-arms, who galloped behind him. The curving antlers rose like eager claws. As Taran watched, terrified but unable to turn away, the horned king's head swung slowly in the direction of the heights. Taran pressed flat against the earth. Aron's champion, he was sure, could not see him. It was only a trick of his mind, a mirror of his own fear. But it seemed the Horn King's eyes sought him out and thrust like daggers at his heart. "They have overtaken us," Taran said in a flat voice.
"Hurry," snapped the dwarf. "Get hustling, instead of dawdling and moaning. We're no more than a day away from Caer Dathil, and so are they. We can still move faster. If you hadn't stopped for that ungrateful spy of an Uvin, we'd be well ahead of them by now. Don't say I didn't warn you."
"We should arm ourselves a little better," the bard said. "The Horned King will have outriders on both sides of the valley." Taran unstrapped the weapons on Melengar's back and handed a bow and quiver of arrows to his companions, as well as a short spear for each. King Idileg had given them round bronze bucklers. They were dwarf size, and, after his view of the marching hosts, Taran found them pitifully small. Gurgi buckled a short sword around his waist. Of all the band, he was the most excited.
"Yes, yes," he cried. "Now, bold, valiant Gurgi is a mighty warrior, too. He has a grinding gasher and a pointed piercer. He is ready for great fightings and smitings."
"And so am I," Fluda declared. "Nothing withstands the onslaught of an angry flam."
The dwarf clapped his hands to his head and gnashed his teeth.
"Stop jabbering and move," he sputtered.
This time he was too furious to hold his breath. Taran slung the buckler over his shoulder. Henwen hung back and grunted fearfully. "I know you're afraid," Taran whispered coaxingly, "but you'll be safe in Caer Dathil." The pig followed reluctantly, but as Dolly set off once again, she lagged behind, and it was all Taran could do to urge her forward. Her pink snout trembled. Her eyes darted from one side of the path to the other. At the next halt, Dolly summoned Taran.
"Keep on like this," he cried, "and you'll have no chance at all. First a Gwythane delays us, now a pig."
"She's frightened," Taran tried to explain to the angry dwarf. "She knows the Horned King is near."
"Then tie her up," Dolly said. "Put her on the horse."
Taran nodded. "Yes, she won't like it, but there's nothing else we can do." A few moments before, the pig had been crouched at the roots of a tree. Now there was no sign of her.
"Hen?"
Taran called. He turned to the bard.
"Where did she go?"
he asked in alarm. The bard shook his head. Neither he nor Alanwi had seen her move. Gurgi had been watering Melengar and had not noticed the pig at all.
"She can't have run off again," Taran cried.
He raced back into the woods. When he returned, his face was pale.
"She's gone," he gasped. "She's hiding somewhere, I know it."
He sank to the ground and put his head in his hands.
"I shouldn't have let her out of my sight, not even for a moment," he said bitterly. "I have failed twice."
"Let the others go on," Ailanwy said. "We'll find her and catch up with them."
Before Taran could answer, he heard a sound that chilled his blood. From the hills came the voices of a hunting pack in full cry, and the long notes of a horn. The companion stood frozen with dread. With the ice of terror in his throat, Taran looked at the silent faces around him. The dire music trembled in the air. A shadow flickered across the lowering sky.
"Where Gwyn the Hunter rides," murmured Fluda, "death rides close behind."
Chapter 18. the flame of Durnwin. No sooner had the notes of Gwyn's horn sunk into the hills than Taran started, as though waking from a fearful dream. Hoofbeats drummed across the meadow.
"The Horned King's scouts!" cried Fluda, pointing to the mounted warriors galloping toward them. "They've seen us!"
Up from the plains the riders sped, bent over their saddles, urging on their steeds. They drew closer, lances leveled as if each gleaming point sought its own target.
"I could try to make another web," Ailanwy suggested, then added, "but I'm afraid the last one wasn't too useful."
Taran's sword flashed out. "There are only four of them," he said. "We match them in numbers at least."
"Put up your blade," Fluda said. "Arrows first. We'll have work enough for swords later."
They unslung their bows. Under Fluda's orders, they formed a line and knelt shoulder to shoulder. The bard's spiky yellow hair blew in the wind. His face shone with excitement.
"I haven't had a good fight in years," he said. "That's one of the things I miss, being a bard. They'll see what it means to attack a flam."
Taran knocked an arrow to the string. At a word from the bard, the companions drew their bows and took aim.
"Loose!" shouted Fluda.
Taran saw his own shaft fly wide of the leading horseman. With a cry of anger, he seized another arrow from the quiver. Beside him, he heard Gurgi shout triumphantly. Of the volley, only Gurgi's bolt had found its mark. A warrior toppled from his horse, the shaft deep in his throat.
"They know we can sting," Fluda cried. "Loose again!"
The horseman veered. More cautious now, the warriors raised their bucklers. Of the three, two drove directly for the companions. The third turned his mount's head and galloped to the flank of the defenders.
"Now, friends," shouted the bard, "back to back."
Taran heard Doli grunt as the dwarf loosed an arrow at the nearest warrior. Gurgi's shot had been lucky. Now the shafts hissed through the air, only to glance off the attacker's light shields. Behind Taran, Melengar whinnied and pawed the ground frantically. Taran remembered how valiantly she had fought for Gwydion, but she was tethered now, and he dared not break away from the defenders to untie her. The horsemen circled. One turned his exposed side to the companions. Doli's arrow leapt from the bowstring and buried itself in the warrior's neck. The other horsemen spun their mounts and galloped across the meadow.
"We've beaten them," cried Ailanwy. "That's like bees driving away eagles."
The panting Fluda shook his head.
"They'll spend no more men on us. When they come back, they'll come back with a warband. That's highly complimentary to our bravery, but I don't think we should wait for them. A flam knows when to fight and when to run. At this point, we had better run."
"I won't leave Henwen," cried Taran.
"Go look for her," growled Doli. "You'll lose your head as well as your pig."
"Crafty Gurgi will go," suggested Gurgi. "With bold seekings and peekings."
"In all likelihood," said the bard, "they'll attack us again. We can't afford to lose what little strength we have. A flam never worries about being outnumbered, but one sword less could be fatal. I'm sure your pig is able to look out for herself. Wherever she may be, she's in less danger than we are." Taran nodded. "It is true, but it grieves me to lose her for the second time. I had chosen to abandon my search and go to Caer Dathil. Then, after Gurgi found Henwen, I had hoped to accomplish both tasks. But I fear it must be one or the other."
"The question is," said Fluda, "is there any chance at all of warning the Sons of Don before the Horned King attacks? Doli is the only one who can answer that."
The dwarf scowled and thought for a few moments.
"Possible," he said. "But we'll have to go into the valley. We'll be in the middle of the Horned King's vanguard if we do."
"Can we get through?" asked Taran.
"Won't know until you've tried," grunted Doli.
"The decision is yours," said the bard, glancing at Taran.
"We shall try," Taran answered.
For the rest of that day, they travelled without a halt. At nightfall, Taran would have been glad to rest, but the dwarf warned against it. The companions pressed on in weary silence. They had escaped the attack Fluda expected, but a column of horsemen bearing torches passed within bowshot of them. The companions crouched in the fringe of trees until the streaks of flame wound behind a hill and vanished. In a short time, Doli led the little band into the valley, where they found concealment in the wooded groves. But the dawn revealed a sight that filled Taran with despair. The valley roiled with warriors wherever he turned his eyes. Black banners whipped against the sky. The host of the Horned King was like the body of an armed giant, restlessly stirring. For a moment, Taran stared in disbelief. He turned his face away. "Too late," he murmured. "Too late. We have failed." While the dwarf surveyed the marching columns, Fluda strode forward.
"There is one thing we can do," he cried. "Cair Dathil lies straight ahead. Let us go on and make our last stand there."
Taran nodded. "Yes, my place is at the side of Gwydion's people. Doli shall lead Gurgi and Ilanwi to safety." He took a deep breath and buckled his sword belt more tightly. "You have guided us well," he said quietly to the dwarf. "Return to your king with our gratitude. Your work is done." The dwarf looked at him furiously.
"Done?" he snorted. "Idiots and numbskulls! It's not that I care what happens to you, but don't think I'm going to watch you get hacked to pieces. I can't stand a botched job. Like it or not, I'm going with you."
Before the words were out of his mouth, an arrow sang past Doli's head. Melingar reared up. A party of foot soldiers sprang from the woods behind the companions.
"Begone!"
the bard shouted to Taran.
"Ride as fast as you can, or it will be death for all of us."
When Taran hesitated, the bard seized him by the shoulders, pitched him toward the horse, and thrust Ilanwi after him. Fluda drew his sword.
"Do as I say,"
shouted the bard, his eyes blazing. Taran leapt to Melingar's saddle and pulled Ilanwi up behind him. The white horse shot forward. Ilanwi clung to Taran's waist as the steed galloped straight across the bracken toward the vanguard of the Horned King. Taran made no attempt to guide her. The horse had chosen her own path. Suddenly, he was in the midst of the warriors. Melingar reared and plunged. Taran's sword was out, and he struck right and left. A hand clutched at the stirrups, then was ripped away. Taran saw the warrior stumble back and drown in the press of struggling men. The white horse broke free and streaked for the brow of the hill. One mounted figure galloped behind them now. In a terrified glance, Taran saw the sweeping antlers of the Horned King. The black steed gained on them. Melingar turned sharply and drove toward the forest. The Horned King turned with her, and as they crashed through the underbrush and past the first rows of trees, the antlered giant drew closer until both steeds galloped side by side. In a final burst of speed, the horse of the Horned King plunged ahead. The animal's flanks bore against Melingar, who reared furiously and struck out with her hooves. Taran and Ilanwi were flung from the saddle. The Horned King turned his mount, seeking to trample them. Taran scrambled to his feet and struck blindly with his sword. Then, gripping Ilanwi's arm, he pulled her deeper into the protection of the trees. The Horned King sprang heavily to the ground and was upon them in a few long strides. Ilanwi screamed. Taran swung about to face the antlered man. Dark fears clutched Taran, as though the Lord of Anuvin himself had opened an abyss at his feet, and he was hurtling downward. He gasped with pain, as though his old wound had opened once again. All the despair he had known as Akron's captive returned to sap his strength. Behind the bleached skull, the eyes of the Horned King flamed as he raised a crimson-stained arm. Blindly, Taran brought up his sword. It trembled in his hand. The Horned King's blade lashed against the weapon and shattered it with a single blow. Taran dropped the useless shards. The Horned King paused. A growl of savage joy rose in his throat, and he took a firmer grasp on his weapon. Mortal terror goaded Taran into action. He leapt back and spun toward Ilanwi.
"Durnwin," he cried, "give me the sword!"
Before she could move, he tore belt and weapon from her shoulder. The Horned King saw the black scabbard and hesitated a moment, as if in fear. Taran grasped the hilt. The blade would not come free. He pulled with all his strength. The sword moved only a little from its sheath. The Horned King raised his own weapon. As Taran gave a final wrench, the scabbard turned in his hand. A blinding flash split the air in front of him. Lightning seared his arm, and he was thrown violently to the ground. The sword Durnwin, blazing white with flame, leapt from his hand and fell beyond his reach. The Horned King stood over him. With a cry, Ailanwy sprang at the antlered man. Snarling, the giant tossed her aside. A voice rang out behind the Horned King. Through eyes blurred with pain, Taran glimpsed a tall figure against the trees and heard a shouted word he could not distinguish. The Horned King stood motionless, his arm upraised. Lightning played about his sword. The giant flamed like a burning tree. The stag horns turned to crimson streaks. The skull mask ran like molten iron. A roar of pain and rage rose from the antlered king's throat. With a cry, Taran flung an arm across his face. The ground rumbled and seemed to open beneath him. Then there was nothing. Chapter 19. The Secret. Sunlight streamed through the high window of a chamber, pleasantly cool and fragrant. Taran blinked and tried to lift himself from the low, narrow couch. His head spun. His arm, swathed in white linen, throbbed painfully. Dry rushes covered the floor. The bright rays turned them yellow as wheat. Beside the couch, a white, sun-dappled shape stirred and rose up.
"Wench!"
Henwen, wheezing and chuckling, grinned all over her round face. With a joyful grunt, she began nuzzling Taran's cheek. His mouth opened, but he could not speak. A silvery laugh rang from a corner of the chamber.
"You should really see your expression. You look like a fish that's climbed into a bird's nest by mistake."
Ailanwy rose from the osier stool.
"I was hoping you'd wake up soon. You can't imagine how boring it is to sit and watch somebody sleep. It's like counting stones in a wall."
"Where have they taken us? Is this Anuvin?" Ailanwy laughed again and shook her head.
"That's exactly the sort of question you might expect from an assistant pig-keeper. Anuvin? Ugh! I wouldn't want to be there at all. Why must you always think of unpleasant things? I suppose it's because your wound probably did something to your head. You're looking a lot better now than you did, though you still have that greenish-white colour, like a boiled leek."
"Stop chattering and tell me where we are." Taran tried to roll from the couch, then sank back weakly and put a hand to his head.
"You aren't supposed to get up yet," Ailanwy cautioned, "but I imagine you've just discovered that for yourself."
Wriggling and grunting loudly, the delighted Henwen had begun to climb onto the couch. Ailanwy snapped her fingers.
"Stop that, Hen," she ordered. "You know he isn't to be disturbed or upset, and especially not sat on."
The girl turned again to Taran.
"We're in Caer Dathil," she said. "It's a lovely place. Much nicer than Spiral Castle."
Taran started up once more as memories flooded over him.
"The Horned King," he cried. "What happened? Where is he?" "In a barrow, most likely, I should think."
"Is he dead?"
"Naturally," answered the girl. "You don't think he'd stand being put in a barrow if he weren't, do you? There wasn't a great deal left of him. But what there was got buried."
Ailanwy shuddered.
"I think he was the most terrifying person I've ever met, and that includes Akron. He gave me a dreadful tossing about, just before he was going to smite you."
She rubbed her head.
"For the matter of that, you pulled away my sword rather roughly. I told you and told you not to draw it, but you wouldn't listen. That's what burned your arm."
Taran noticed the black scabbard of Durnwin no longer hung from Ailanwy's shoulder.
"But then what? It's lucky you went unconscious," Ailanwy continued. "You missed the worst of it. There was the earthquake, then the Horned King burning until he just, well, broke apart. It wasn't pleasant. The truth of the matter is, I'd rather not talk about it. It still gives me bad dreams, even when I'm not asleep."
Taran gritted his teeth.
"Ailanwy," he said at last, "I want you to tell me very slowly and carefully what happened. If you don't, I'm going to be angry, and you're going to be sorry." "How can I tell you anything?" Ailanwy said,
deliberately pronouncing every word and making extravagant grimaces as she did so. "If you don't want me to talk," she shrugged. "Well, in any case," she resumed at her usual breathless rate, "as soon as the armies saw the Horned King was dead, they practically fell apart, too. Not the same way, naturally. With them it was more sort of running away, like a herd of rabbits. No, that isn't right, is it? But it was pitiful to see grown men so frightened. Of course, by that time the Sons of Dawn had their chance to attack. You should have seen the golden banners. And such handsome warriors," Alanwy sighed. It was like, I don't even know what it was like.
"And Henwen?"
"She hasn't stirred from this chamber ever since they brought you here," said Alanwy. "Neither have I," she added with a glance at Taran. "She's a very intelligent pig," Alanwy went on. "Oh, she does get frightened and loses her head once in a while, I suppose. And she can be very stubborn when she wants, which sometimes makes me wonder how much difference there is between pigs and the people who keep them. I'm not mentioning anyone in particular, you understand."
The door opposite Taran's couch opened part way. Around it appeared the spiky yellow head and pointed nose of Fluda Flam.
"So you're back with us," cried the bard. "Or, as you might say, we're back with you."
Gurgi and the dwarf, who had been standing behind the bard, now rushed in. Despite Alanwi's protests, they crowded around Taran. Fluda and Doli showed no sign of injury, but Gurgi's head was bound up, and he moved with a limp.
"Yes, yes," he cried. "Gurgi fought for his friend with slashings and gashings. What smitings! Fierce warriors strike him about his poor, tender head, but valiant Gurgi does not flee. Oh, no!"
Taran smiled at him, deeply touched. "I'm sorry about your poor, tender head," he said, putting a hand on Gurgi's shoulder. "And that a friend should be wounded for my sake."
"What joy! What clashings and smashings! Ferocious Gurgi fills wicked warriors with awful terror and outcries."
"It's true," said the bard. "He was the bravest of us all. Though my stumpy friend here can do surprising things with an axe."
Doli, for the first time, grinned.
"Never thought any of you had any metal to show," he said, attempting to be gruff. "Took you all for milksops at first. Deepest apologies," he added with a bow.
"We held off the warband," Fluda said, "until we were sure you were well away. Some of them should have occasion to think unkindly of us for a while to come."
The bard's face lit up.
"There we were," he cried, "fighting like madmen, hopelessly outnumbered. But a Flam never surrenders. I took on three at once, slash, thrust. Another seized me from behind, the wretched coward. But I flung him off. We disengaged them and made for Caer Dathil, chopping and hacking all the way, beset on all sides."
Taran expected Fluda's harpstrings to sunder at any moment. To his surprise, they held firm.
"And so," Fluda concluded with a carefree shrug, "that was our part. Rather easy, when you come down to it. I had no fear of things going badly, not for an instant."
A string broke with a deep twang. Fluda bent down to Taran.
"Terrified," he whispered. "Absolutely green."
Alarnwy seized the bard and thrust him toward the door.
"Begone," she cried, "all of you. You'll wear him out with your chatter."
The girl shoved Gurgi and the dwarf after Fluda.
"And stay out. No one's to come in until I say they can."
"Not even I?"
Taran started up at the familiar voice. Gwydion stood in the doorway. For a moment, Taran did not recognize him. Instead of the stained cloak and coarse jacket, Gwydion wore the shining raiment of a prince. His rich mantle hung in deep folds. On a chain at his throat gleamed a sun-shaped disc of gold. His green eyes shone with new depth and power. Taran saw him now as he had always imagined him. Heedless of his wounded arm, Taran sprang from the couch. The tall figure strode toward him. The authority of the warrior's bearing made Taran drop to one knee.
Lord Gwydion, he murmured.
That is no greeting from a friend to a friend, said Gwydion, gently raising Taran to his feet. It gives me more pleasure to remember an assistant pig-keeper who feared I would poison him in the forest near Caer Dalban.
After Spyro Castle, Taran stammered, I never thought to see you alive. He clasped Gwydion's hand and wept unashamedly.
A little more alive than you are, Gwydion smiled. He helped Taran seat himself on the couch.
But how did... Taran began, as he noticed a black and battered weapon at Gwydion's side. Gwydion saw the question on Taran's face.
A gift, he said. A royal gift from a young lady.
I girded it on him myself,
Ailanwy interrupted. She turned to Gwydion.
I told him not to draw it, but he's impossibly stubborn.
Fortunately, you did not unsheath it entirely, Gwydion said to Taran. I fear the flame of Durnwin would have been too great even for an assistant pig-keeper. It is a weapon of power, as Ailanwy recognized, Gwydion added. So ancient that I believed it no more than a legend. There are still deep secrets concerning Durnwin, unknown even to the wisest. Its loss destroyed Spiral Castle, and was a severe blow to Aron. With a single firm gesture, Gwydion drew the blade and held it aloft. The weapon glittered blindingly. In fear and wonder, Taran shrank back, his wound throbbing anew. Gwydion quickly returned the blade to its scabbard.
As soon as I saw Lord Gwydion, Ailanwy put in, with an admiring glance at him, I knew he was the one who should keep the sword. I must say I'm glad to have done with the clumsy thing.
Do stop interrupting, Taran cried. Let me find out what happened to my friend before you start babbling. I shall not weary you with a long tale, Gwydion said. You already know Aron's threat has been turned aside. He may strike again, how or when no man can guess. But for the moment there is little fear.
What of Akron? Taran asked, and Spiral Castle?
I was not in Spiral Castle when it crumbled, Gwydion said. Akron took me from my cell and bound me to a horse. With the cauldron born, we rode to the castle of Etharneth.
Etharneth? Questioned Taran.
It is a stronghold of Anúvin, Gwydion said, not far from Spiral Castle, raised when Aron held wider sway over Prydaine. A place of death, its walls are filled with human bones. I could foresee the torments Akron had planned for me. Yet, before she thrust me into its dungeons, she gripped my arm. "Why do you choose death, Lord Gwydion?" she cried, "when I can offer you eternal life and power beyond the grasp of mortal minds." "I ruled Prydaine long before Aron," Akron told me, "and it was I who made him king over Anúvin. It was I who gave him power, though he used it to betray me. But now, if you desire it, you shall take your place on the high throne of Aron himself, and rule in his stead." "Gladly will I overthrow Aron," I answered, "and I will use those powers to destroy you along with him." Raging, she cast me into the lowest dungeon, Gwydion said. I have never been closer to my death than in Etharneth.
How long I lay there I cannot be sure, Gwydion continued.
In Etharneth, time is not as you know it here. It is better that I do not speak of the torments Akron had devised. The worst were not of the body, but of the spirit, and of these the most painful was despair. Yet, even in my deepest anguish, I clung to hope. For there is this about Etharneth. If a man withstand it, even death will give up its secrets to him. I withstood it, Gwydion said quietly, and at the end much was revealed to me which before had been clouded. Of this, too, I shall not speak. It is enough for you to know that I understood the workings of life and death, of laughter and tears, endings and beginnings. I saw the truth of the world, and knew no chains could hold me. My bonds were light as dreams. At that moment, the walls of my prison melted.
What became of Akron? Ailanwy asked.
I do not know, Gwydion said. I did not see her thereafter. For some days I lay concealed in the forest, to heal the injuries of my body. Spiral Castle was in ruins when I returned to seek you, and there I mourned your death.
as we mourned yours, Taran said. I set out for Caer Dathil again, Gwydion continued. For a time I followed the same path Fluda chose for you, though I did not cross the valley until much later. By then I had outdistanced you a little. That day a Gwythaint plunged from the sky and flew directly toward me. To my surprise, it neither attacked nor sped away after it had seen me, but fluttered before me, crying strangely. The Gwythaint's language is no longer secret to me, nor is the speech of any living creature, and I understood a band of travellers was journeying from the hills nearby, and a white pig accompanied them. I hastened to retrace my steps. By then, Henwen sensed I was close at hand. When she ran from you, Gwydion said to Taran, she ran not in terror, but to find me. What I learned from her was more important than I suspected, and I understood why Aron's champion sought her desperately. He, too, realized she knew the one thing that could destroy him. What was that? Taran asked urgently. She knew the Horn King's secret name. His name? Taran cried in astonishment. I never realized a name could be so powerful. Yes, Gwydion answered. Once you have courage to look upon evil, seeing it for what it is, and naming it by its true name, it is powerless against you, and you can destroy it. Yet with all my understanding, he said, reaching down and scratching the white pig's ear, I could not have discovered the Horn King's name without Henwen. Henwen told me this secret in the forest. I had no need of letter sticks or tomes of enchantment, for we could speak as one heart and mind to each other. The Gwythaint, circling overhead, led me to the Horned King. The rest you know. Where is the Gwythaint now? Asked Taran. Gwydion shook his head. I do not know. But I doubt she will ever return to Anuvin, for Aron would rend her to pieces once he learned what she had done. I only know she has repaid your kindness in the fullest measure. Rest now, Gwydion said. Later we shall speak of happier things.
Lord Gwydion, Ilanwy called as he rose to leave, what was the Horn King's secret name?
Gwydion's lined face broke into a smile. It must remain a secret, he said, then patted the girl gently on the cheek. But I assure you, it was not half as pretty as your own. A few days afterward, when Taran had regained strength enough to walk unaided, Gwydion accompanied him through Caer Dathil. Standing high on a hill, the fortress alone was big enough to hold several Caer Dalbans. Taran saw armorer's shops, stables for the steeds of warriors, breweries, weaving rooms. Cottages clustered in the valleys below, and clear streams ran golden in the sunlight. Later, Gwydion summoned all the companions to the great hall of Caer Dathil, and there, amid banners and hedges of spears, they received the gratitude of King Math, son of Mathonwy, ruler of the House of Don. The white-bearded monarch, who looked as old as Dalban and as testy, was even more talkative than Alanwy. But when at last he had finished one of the longest speeches Taran had ever heard, the companions bowed, and a guard of honour bore King Math from the hall on a litter draped with cloth of gold. As Taran and his friends were about to take their leave, Gwydion called to them. "These are small gifts for great valour," he said, "but it is in my power to bestow them, which I do with a glad heart, and with hope that you will treasure them, not so much for their value, as for the sake of remembrance. To Fluda Flam shall be given one harp string. Though all his others break, this shall forever hold, regardless of how many gallant extravagances he may put on it, and its tone shall be the truest and most beautiful. To Doli of the Fair Folk shall be granted the power of invisibility, so long as he chooses to retain it. To faithful and valiant Gergi shall be given a wallet of food which shall be always full. Guard it well. It is one of the treasures of Prydain. To Ilanwy of the House of Lear shall be given a ring of gold, set with a gem carved by the ancient craftsmen of the Fair Folk. It is precious, but to me her friendship is even more precious. And to Taran of Caer Dalban," here Gwydion paused, "the choice of his reward has been the most difficult of all." "I ask no reward,"
Taran said. I want no friend to repay me for what I did willingly, out of friendship and for my own honor. Gwydion smiled. Taran of Caer Dalbyn, he said, you are still as touchy and headstrong as ever. Believe that I know what you yearn for in your heart. The dreams of heroism, of worth, and of achievement are noble ones, but you, not I, must make them come true. Ask me whatever else, and I shall grant it. Taran bowed his head. In spite of all that has befallen me, I have come to love the valleys and mountains of your northern lands. But my thoughts have turned more and more to Caer Dalbyn. I long to be home. Gwydion nodded. So it shall be. Chapter 20 Welcomes. The journey to Caer Dalbyn was swift and unhindered, for the lords of the southern Cantreves, their power broken, had slunk back each to his own tribe throne. Taran and his companions, with Gwydion himself leading, rode south through the valley of Istrad. Eilanwy, who had heard so much of Taran's talk of Carl and Dalbyn, would not be denied a visit, and she too rode with them. Gwydion had given each of the companions a handsome steed. To Taran he had given the finest, the grey, silver-maned stallion, Melinlas, of the lineage of Melingar and a swift. Henwen rode triumphantly on a horse litter, looking intensely pleased with herself. Caer Dalbyn had never seen so joyous a welcome, though by this time Taran was not positive about what Dalbyn had or had not seen, with such feasting that even Gergi had his fill for once. Carl embraced Taran, who was amazed that such a hero would deign to remember an assistant peakeeper, as well as Eilanwy, Henwen, and anyone else he could get his hands on. His face beamed like a winter fire, and his bald crown glowed with delight. Dalbyn interrupted his meditations to be present at the feast, though soon after the festivities he withdrew to his chamber, and was not seen for some time. Later, he and Gwydion spent several hours alone, for there were important matters Gwydion would reveal only to the old enchanter. Gergi, making himself completely at home, snored under a pile of hay in the barn. While Fluda and Doli went off exploring, Taran showed Eilanwy Henwen's enclosure, where the pig chuckled and grunted as happily as before.
"So this is where it all began," Eilanwy said. I don't want to sound critical, but I don't think you should have had all that trouble keeping her in. Caer Dalbyn is as lovely as you said, and you should be glad to be home, she went on. It's like suddenly remembering where you put something you've been looking for.
Yes, I suppose it is, Taran said, leaning on the railing and examining it closely.
What will you do now? Asked Eilanwy. I expect you'll go back to assistant pig-keeping.
Without looking up, Taran nodded. Eilanwy, he said. With hesitation. I was hoping, I mean, I was wondering. Before he could finish, Carl came hurrying up and whispered that Dalbyn would like to see him privately. Eilanwy, Taran began again, then stopped abruptly and strode off to the cottage. When he entered the chamber, Dalbyn was writing with a great quill in the Book of Three. As soon as he saw Taran, he shut the volume quickly and put it aside.
"Well, now," Dalbyn said, "I should like the two of us to speak quietly to each other. First, I am interested to learn what you think of being a hero. I dare say you feel rather proud of yourself. Although," he added, "I do not gain that impression from your face."
"I have no just cause for pride," Taran said, taking his usual place on the familiar bench. It was Gwydion who destroyed the Horned King, and Henwen helped him do it. But Gergi, not I, found her. Doli and Fluda fought gloriously while I was wounded by a sword I had no right to draw. And Eilanwy was the one who took the sword from the barrow in the first place. As for me, what I mostly did was make mistakes.
"My, my," said Dalbyn, "those are complaints enough to dampen the merriest feast. Though what you say may be true, you have cause for a certain pride, nevertheless. It was you who held the companions together and led them. You did what you set out to do, and Henwen is safely back with us. If you made mistakes, you recognize them. As I told you, there are times when the seeking counts more than the finding. Does it truly matter, Dalvin went on, which of you did what?